Welcome to Different Minds, a podcast series about the different ways our brains can work and interpret information. I'm delighted to be joined by Deborah Wortman and Mark Berry to talk about neurotypical and neurodivergent relationships. Deborah is a qualified psychotherapist and co-director of Aspire Autism Consultancy, and Mark works in IT. Welcome to Different Minds, guys.
Hi, John. Hi. Thank you for inviting us to come and talk.
A pleasure. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. So tell us about when you guys met.
We met just over 30 years ago now. Yeah. When we first met, we had a really, really good relationship. Mark was really kind of, you were very chatty, weren't you? You had a really good sense of humour. And we got on really well. And I at that time didn't suspect that Mark might be autistic. I knew that there were some situations that you really struggled with, yeah. Right? You found groups and sort of meeting with my family quite difficult. We dated, didn't we, for about 2 years, and we really got to know each other. And then we moved in together and moved into to Mark's house.
The early days of the relationship, I was what I call paddling like mad underneath. Yeah. And what I know now since my diagnosis and since being involved with Aspire and doing my own research is I was masking like mad. I didn't know I was autistic, and I just assumed that everybody else was doing the same thing and that people were actually better than me at it. And from a self-esteem point of view, it's quite demoralizing to feel that you're not as good as everybody else. And in other aspects, you know that you're far better than other people. But particularly around the social interaction and stuff, I knew I was terrible. And like I said, I was what I know now is masking like mad. I would come away from social situations absolutely exhausted. And similarly with Deborah, I was to put the effort in the early stages was really, really tiring, but I could do that because I could come back home, I could chill out at home after the event. So then being with that person full time then becomes more tiring and more of an issue for me in trying to keep that level of masking up all the time. And I think to a certain degree that's when the cracks started to appear. In not necessarily in the relationship, but in the overall pitch, in the whole dynamics of things.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I think that's interesting is that, you know, people talk about when you're dating for an autistic person that can become their new special interest. And I certainly think it was for you, Mark, because you were really attentive. You were very caring. You know, you'd make a very nice gestures, you would buy little presents. And I think that you put so much effort in at the beginning. And I think that's continued, but in different ways. I think, like Mark says, the kind of cracks started to show when we moved in together, because Mark wasn't used to having somebody else living in the house. He had quite a routine of when he came home from work. And he found that end of the day really difficult, and needing to have that space on his own and not always wanting to interact and not always kind of wanting to chat about my day, or even sometimes not even inquiring about my day.
I basically need kind of 20 minutes, half an hour downtime at the end of the day just to kind of reset. And it's that I find difficult when you're obviously in a full relationship. And equally now, you know, I find it very difficult in a work situation whereby I go from work to a night out, for instance, because I don't get that break. And sometimes I just need to take myself away, stay on the periphery of things, just have a little bit of quiet time in a corner somewhere with a beer or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I can come back in and rejoin the conversations and everything else.
Yeah.
I think also some of the difficulties were around communication, because you are very much Just give me the information I need. You don't need to make it flowery and add bits to it. I'm very black and white and very logical in your thinking.
So a Ronnie Corbett sit down in the chair and tell a story is kind of really, really annoying to me. Just get to the point. Don't go off and diverge. I don't really need to know the rest of it. I just want to know the information I need to know.
Can you tell me more about some of the challenges then you both faced at the beginning of the relationship?
Well, I think, as we said, the communication, the need to recognise that Mark needed some time out. I think probably for me at the beginning of the relationship, I was starting to kind of recognise that sometimes my needs were not attended to, and I could feel quite upset at times that Mark didn't recognise that if I'd had a bad day at work, that I might need something. I think really the bigger challenges in the relationship came perhaps a little bit later on when we had our first child. So we got married, and 5 months later we had our first child.
Right.
And
in the maths.
We now know that both of our children are neurodivergent. And I think that there were some particular challenges with our son that started quite early on that we both recognised. But it was the amount of stuff that was going on. So we had a child, and we were both working in very busy jobs, and things started to kind of crack and stuff. The bricks started to start breaking down a little bit.
Not only was I now paddling hard to keep the relationship going, not having that downtime, I was also paddling hard, keeping the relationship going and looking after a child, which is, you know, quite full on at the best of times. Coping with both those and not having that, like I said, not having that downtime, because you can't have a downtime with a child.
At this point, Mark, you hadn't received a diagnosis at this point, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. We managed to carry on, and things would peak and trough and so on and so on, like all relationships to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And then came our second child, our daughter, and that coincided to a certain degree when Deborah was working away quite a lot, and I was looking after two children, doing the job, doing the morning, taking to nursery, doing the evening, picking up from nursery. As soon as I got in, I'd have to start making tea and so on and so on. I know that's the kind of stuff that ordinary, everyday people do. But again, I can't have that downtime. And during that period, I would say I wasn't a particularly nice person.
Right.
I will hold my hand up and say I wasn't. And that was probably the darkest times for me.
Your mental health started to deteriorate, didn't it?
Yeah.
And it was quite noticeable. And then Mark would do things that were really out of character, where he would just get in the car and just disappear, which was really kind of really scary, not knowing where he'd gone. But he wouldn't, I mean, I think we were just in the early days of mobile phones, but he wouldn't take anything with him because he just needed to get away.
Yeah,
And that can be really alarming when you've got two small children and you don't know where your partner's gone. But I now know, on reflection, you just needed to get away. Mm-hmm. There was no space anywhere. You just needed to get away from everything.
And that started kind of leaking into work as well, and I was having some problems at work. I'd kind of taking on a management position and managing other people and being constantly interrupted, so I can't concentrate on certain things. So the things were just slowly building up. There was something that I'd either seen on TV or I'd read in a newspaper or something like that about Asperger's.
And it was just after... 1994 saw the inclusion of Asperger's in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. So yeah. I think that there was more talk around that time about Asperger's, because this is just about 10 years after that, isn't it?
So I was kind of vaguely aware of it, and I didn't really understand the difficulties that it caused or anything like that, but I knew I was pretty, it fitted me very, very well. And then I found an online survey kind of questionnaire, AQ quotient, and I did that, and it came out with a score which clearly indicated I had Asperger's.
Right.
So we kind of put two and two together and sought a diagnosis, didn't we?
We did. We went to the doctor, and what was really interesting, John, is that the GP had no idea. She had no idea what to do, where to send us. And it was interesting then, it continues to still be interesting that people go for a diagnosis and many GPs have no idea or just dismiss it, because by this time Mark was in a relationship, he had a career, he had two children, and I think she almost looked at you and thought, no way.
There's no way you're autistic. Like people say now when I disclose it, most people go, well, I wouldn't have known. That's because I'm paddling like mad, masking all the time.
So we sought a private diagnosis, and we'd gone particularly to this clinical psychologist in the Midlands, because she actually worked with couples, and we thought it might be really helpful. So she did the assessment in the morning, and then she told us just before lunch that she believe that Mark had Asperger's, and I'm using that terminology because that's what Mark's diagnosis was. It was Asperger's at that time. And then she invited us to come back in the afternoon, and she started to talk to us about the relationship and how she thought we needed to perhaps think about things. And then she said, you know, you don't have to live together. And that was kind of like, what? You know, we've only just got a diagnosis, and now you're giving us a piece of information about how much that our relationship might change. But actually, she was right in what she was saying, because it did make us think and to start rebuilding the relationship from a different place.
So how did it feel for you, Mark, then, once you received that diagnosis?
I would say I went through a grieving process, and I would also say that I still am going through that grieving process. I'm grieving for the person that I might have been, but equally, I recognize that I am the person who I am, and I'm good at the things I'm good at because of it. And it's a very, very conflicted situation with myself. I'm not one of these people who goes, yay, I've got a superpower. I'm just not. I grieve for the relationships and that side of things, because I would like it to be better. I would like my relationship with my children to be better. I would like my relationship with other people and in work to be better. I've worked hard at making it what it is now, but it's not innate. It's learnt behaviour. When I kind of describe what I do on a day-to-day basis, I always say I live my life by an internal spreadsheet of, so I've got situation, response.
Yeah.
And all the time I am going down that spreadsheet going, is it this situation? No. Is it that situation? No. Is it that situation? Yes, it is. Say, do the appropriate response. Yes. That turns out to be inappropriate. Then I go, okay, then what's the difference between that situation and the one I've just done? And I'll add another entry into it.
Yeah.
So over the years, I built up my spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Similarly, when I met Deborah, I didn't have any girlfriend entries in the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Relationship entries in the spreadsheet. So I was building this, the appropriate responses, and I still get things wrong now.
I did loads of reading and just kind of wanted to learn and understand more and more about autism. And there wasn't a lot around. There was a couple of people that had written books about living with somebody with Asperger's. But there was one particular book that I think was very helpful, and it sort of kind of set the scene for me and Mark, which was that we weren't going to have the relationship that we thought we were going to have, yeah. but it would be a relationship, but we'd have to really work at it and develop it. And I think that's what we've done, and we recognize that difference and the diversity and our strengths and our limitations. I want maybe just say something about empathy, because I think that's a lot, you know, a lot of people that I see who are in relationships often say, well, you know, my partner doesn't get it and doesn't understand when I'm upset and can't respond. And I'll just give you an example. And I know some people have heard this before, but I think it's a really good example of that double empathy. So how you empathize and understand things and how I empathize are two entirely different things, but we kind of meet somewhere in the middle. So just to give an example of that, a few months ago, we were dropping our daughter back at university, and she's at university in Cornwall. And I always find it incredibly difficult leaving her. And I was sitting in the car quite visibly upset and crying.
Yeah.
And Mark said, have you seen that crane over there? What crane? And do you want to say why you said it?
In my mind, if I'm upset or something distracting, almost like you do with children, say, oh, look at that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they stop crying. And that came out of my spreadsheet. Oh, yeah. Dear, what do? It wasn't that I didn't recognize it. It's that I didn't know the right response or how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not that I don't have empathy. It's that I don't know what to do with it when I have it.
Yeah.
And I think that's that double empathy, isn't it? That, you know, I don't understand... I probably do understand a lot of Mark's world now, and he understands a lot more about mine. But we sort of need to find that place in the middle where we meet each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the time I thought, gosh, what an awful response to me. But then I understood because he explained to me why he'd done that.
I was going to say, do you think it's like now you have that self-awareness, Mark? Do you think that helps now that you kind of understand why you might see something different to the way Deborah does? Does it help that self-awareness?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The diagnosis gave me that self-awareness. And, well, sorry, that diagnosis started that journey. Since working with Deborah... on Aspire and her other work, we do quite a lot together. I do quite a lot behind the scenes, even though I'm not a main contributor or anything. When Deborah was doing a master's, I was doing the reading alongside her. I was correcting her essays and things like that. So I learned quite a lot myself. That education and knowledge has helped me as well.
Yeah.
And doing the courses that we do, they're fantastic. I learn something new every single time, even though I've done the courses probably 20 times now and sat on the panel 20 times. That panel comes up with something different every single time.
Yeah.
And it is, I strongly believe that the panel is absolutely fundamental to the success of the training, because you get to speak with four or five neurodivergent people and they tell it as it is.
Did you feel a sense of relief when you got your diagnosis? Did it kind of like give you that permission to say, oh, that kind of makes sense why this happened and why I did this or I didn't do that? Did it sort of drop into a way that made sense for you?
It made sense. I wouldn't call it relief,
right?
Because it's like, it's one of those things where you're in blissful ignorance.
Yeah.
You're in blissful ignorance. And I was no longer in blissful ignorance. I had a diagnosis that said, all the troubles that you've been having, nobody else has. All the troubles that you've been having, you will continue to have those for you the rest of your life. And that message is hard to take. Whereas previously, I was just blissfully ignorant. I just thought I just wasn't good at the stuff I wasn't good at. Yeah. And now I had a reason, but it didn't make it any easier.
Yeah.
I think for me, it gave me an understanding and a context to understand. Because I think that if we're honest, that I don't think our relationship would have survived if we hadn't been able to have a context to understand things and rebuild it and do it differently.
Yeah, I think the understanding is the biggest thing. It's the problem is it's the most of the understanding is on Deborah's side, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yes, I have an understanding of how my behaviour needs to change, but can change or can be different in certain situations, and I can temper that and I can explain if I need to have a, so when I'm in with Deborah's family, if I need 10 minutes, I just say, well, I just need 10 minutes out.
Yeah.
Whereas before I just slunk off and everybody thought I was rude.
Yeah.
Now there's a reason for it.
Yeah. So you two got that, you communicate well, and you've got that understanding of each other. And that obviously helps, doesn't it? Yeah.
We also, you know, have permissions as well. So, you know, that we don't have a life that's completely entwined in each other. So I go off and I do my things, and I have my friends that I see. You know, if I'm going to go and perhaps to a very noisy place, and I know Mark isn't going to want to do that or enjoy it, there's a permission not to do that as well. Yeah. But I think it's that, you know, we can be together, but we can be separate because there are things that we do and we like that are different. So we've had that permission for a long time now, haven't we?
Yes. Yeah, really interesting.
And so the understanding is really important, and how that translates into, you know, reasonable adjustments doesn't also apply to the workplace. Yeah. It also applies to the home and relationships. You know, like I said, having that downtime at the end of my day is really important. So we have that reasonable adjustment that when I walk in from work, I'm not bombarded with, oh, the toilet's leaking and the roof's falling off. I get 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and then I can be bombarded with the toilet's leaking and the roof's falling off.
So what advice would you give other couples then in a similar situation, perhaps, to you guys?
I think there's lots of advice, but I think that obviously each relationship is different and individual. But I think the things that we would say is that learn to communicate effectively together, develop a learning style, you know, best ways to communicate. So for example, if I want to speak to Mark, I'll always say his name before I'm about to start speaking, so I know I've got his attention. Or if I'm giving him a lot of information, and then I might say to him, I only want you to answer this little bit here. I'm processing time. So those are the kind of a couple of things in terms of the ways that we've thought are really helpful. I think the other thing is that we don't try to mold each other. You know, we are different. We accept that difference, and we always have. And I think we've always accepted that we're a family that is different and diverse. We recognize each other's skills and limitations. That is a really big one. I know there are things that I am really not good at, and Mark is fantastic at. And there are things that he knows that I'm really good at and he's not so good at. And that's okay. It doesn't,
you're good at all the feeling stuff. I'm good at the practical stuff.
Yeah, that's fine.
But even now, I still think, you know, come on, get over it. It's not that big a deal. But I know that's not how to do it. So that's in my spreadsheet. So I'm going to think of another way of saying that.
And I think the other thing is that we did do this at the very beginning in terms of having some couple counselling. And I think I now know, and I think Mark will probably endorse this, that it didn't work for us because the counsellor that we went to didn't have the knowledge and understanding of neurodiversity. And actually was was causing us more problems than it was actually causing us good. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's the big thing, that, you know, find a couple counsellor that really has the understanding.
Yeah.
And again, I think the other thing, I don't know if you want us to talk, John, a little bit about our parenting.
Yeah. No, that would be really useful.
Well, both of our children are adults now. Yeah. And they're amazing. They are amazing adults. Our son is a primary school teacher. Our daughter's at university in her final year. And they are amazing because they've had many, many challenges, and we've had many challenges along the way. I think that I think you would acknowledge that a lot of the difficult parenting I've dealt with.
And partly because I was made redundant and I got a really good job, but it was working out of London.
Yeah.
So I was staying down in London during the week,
yeah,
coming home at weekends. I often say that probably saved us to a certain degree. However, it was incredibly difficult to hear some of the things that was going on at home and the difficulties Deborah was having with kids. Being so remote was incredibly worrying and just difficult. It really, really was. I would empathize with Deborah. I'd know what she was going through, but I couldn't do anything about it. All I could do was just kind of be at the end of the phone and listen and try and support whatever decisions were being made. Like I said, both our kids probably reached their early teens before problems really, really started. And there were lots and lots of, like, with hindsight, there were lots of indicators and signs that we could have read, but they never really entered our heads. Even though I was diagnosed, and even though my son was diagnosed, we didn't really see it in our daughter until it was quite advanced. My son was diagnosed with ADHD first. He was borderline being potentially expelled from school. As soon as he was diagnosed with ADHD and started medication, it was a different person, completely and utterly different person. Did well in his exams, went on to do A-levels, went on to do university, and like we said earlier, he's now a primary school teacher. And similar with my daughter. My daughter was first diagnosed with school phobia. We ended up taking her out of school for 2 years, and then we introduced her back into school. Whether that was a good move or not, I don't know. She did okay in her GCSEs and then did okay in her A-levels. And she's really, really flourished at university, to be perfectly honest. She's a different person at university.
Yeah. Good to hear. Nice to hear.
But I think it is a challenge. I think parenting is a challenge anyway, but I think it's a particularly challenging for somebody that's neurodivergent, because there's so many challenges, there's so many demands, there's so many things that you need to adapt and adjust, your routines change, and you're on call all of the time.
Yeah.
And I think Mark's right. I think that for the most difficult years when he was in London, that probably was a blessing for him.
Yeah.
Because he, although you understand meltdowns, you find them quite difficult to manage, don't you? Because they're very sensory.
Yeah.
You know, there might be quite a lot of crying or noise or levels of distress and high levels of emotion, which I think at times you found quite difficult.
Yeah.
So we're just coming towards the end of the podcast now. I just want to ask you, Mark, do you have any parting thoughts for neurotypical partners?
That's a difficult one. I would like to say have Deborah as your wife, because she's fantastic. She, you know, she's embraced the fact that I am neurodivergent and has worked with it and also made a career out of it.
Yeah.
Her understanding, her reasonable adjustments, as we discussed earlier, they're all so, so important. and also helping me build my spreadsheet, as it were, to give me the guidance of, oh, you shouldn't have said that there, you should have said X. So that's another entry in my spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And I know not to mention Cranes when she's crying in the car. she's been absolutely fantastic. I can't say any more, really.
Yeah,
and I don't deserve it.
And what about you then, Deborah? Any thoughts for newer Divergent partners?
I think if you suspect that you might be neurodivergent, share it with your partner, let them know what your thinking is. Don't struggle alone. Try and talk about what's going on for you. If you're feeling very stressed, if you need time out, if you need something different to happen, make them aware. And try as best as you can to communicate, and don't struggle alone. You know, there's always help, there's always somebody. And I think that in relationships, honesty and trust are the most important things. And that's, I think, so important to develop, whether you're not autistic or neuro or autistic. Trust and honesty.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll
just like to add a couple of things, and that's I am quite strongly alexithymic, in that basically means I don't know what my feelings are. I know what happy is, I know what sad is, I know what angry is, but from 0 to 100, everything, when I recognize it, I'm close to 100. I don't recognize the build-up stages to that. And Deborah's given me the language over the years. I particularly noticed probably in the last 5 years or so, that you've given me the language to understand what I'm feeling inside and are able to better express that instead of going, I don't know what I feel. I have no idea what I feel.
Yeah.
Because I didn't recognize the signs.
Really interesting. Just before we finish, Deborah, just tell us more about Aspire Autism Consultancy. Obviously, you mentioned some of the training courses earlier, but just tell us more about the work that you do.
So Aspire Autism Consultancy was established by myself and Ruth Williams about 7 years ago now. Both Ruth and I are psychotherapists, and we have specialised in working with autistic and ADHD clients. So apart from the therapeutic work that we do, we offer autism and ADHD training to a range of people. So partners, parents, health professionals, and therapists. And we have on both of our training, we have a panel, as Mark's already mentioned, of people talking about their lived experience, which is absolutely amazing because it really gives you a really good understanding and flavour of what it's like. And then we run some additional training days for therapists, and our aim is to train up as many therapists as we possibly can that have the knowledge and the understanding and the expertise. So Ruth and I offer also individual and couple counselling, and we have a network of people that we refer on to as well, who are very experienced in working with neurodiversity. And for those people that are interested, our next course is on the 3rd and the 4th of December, which is the reality of living with ADHD. And then on the 11th of December, working with ADHD in the therapy room. But we have courses running next year, and we're adding things all the time to what we're doing. So if you're interested and you want to know more about it, then go to the website, which is www.aspireautismconsultancy.co.uk. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram as well. And we're posting regularly. There's some amazing articles on our website that have been contributed by neurodivergent people, and they're lovely, they're brilliant to read.
Brilliant. Well, Deborah, Mark, thank you so much for speaking to me today. It's been really fascinating hearing you both talk about your relationship so openly. And I really think that's going to go a long way to help other people in similar situations. And yeah, keep up the good work, guys. And thanks again for your time.